Okay, here we go. Stand by.
3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
For this milestone broadcast, after all this time, I thought it would be fun to bring Natalie on to just talk about whatever. This is actually a video conversation. The video link is in the description box. There will be some visual references to this or that, or Natalie references somebody in the chat by name. You won't be able to see that, but the rest of it translates. And because you're a podcast listener, we made a few references to things like Ken Copeland and Pastor David Manning, and I've inserted the actual audio that we were talking about in the show. So the podcast listeners get that. The video version's linked in the description box. I hope you enjoy. Just something kind of personal, a window into our lives together. And thank you so much for helping me mark show number 500 of the Thinking Atheist Podcast. This is round two. Natalie and I sat down in front of the microphone a few days ago, and I thought it'd be good to have Natalie on after all this time. You've seen her at the conventions. You hear me talk about her all the time. And so we sat down, and as soon as we were done, we looked at each other and thought, is this lame? Like we did the James Lipton, that interview, the thing that he does, his questionnaire, you know, what's your favorite word? What's your least favorite sound? And after I was done, we both looked at each other and thought, maybe it's kind of lame. So this is round two, and we're just sort of marking the occasion. Natalie's cranky.
Cranky today.
What's going on with you?
I mean, I'm just over it. All of it.
The COVID-19 thing has got you depressed?
A little bit.
I mean, would you call it depression, or are you just weary?
I wouldn't call it depression. So I'm an essential worker.
And she works in healthcare.
And probably until next week, and then I'll be furloughed. But for now, for the past month, while a lot of people have been out, the kids have been out of school and everything, I haven't been able to see my grandkids because I'm exposed, you know, to a lot of people throughout the day, and I'm afraid to be around them. So it's been about a month since I've seen my people.
It's hard.
It is hard.
It's you know, yours. I mean, I work from home, so I'm used to be. It's usually me and the dog for most of the day. So conversation for me consists of you want to go outside? Did you want to go for a walk? I got to be careful. He's sitting down at your feet because he loves to go for a walk. But, you know, you're out there and you're dealing with patients. And we went to the grocery store the other day and, you know, realized how many opportunities you have to contaminate yourself. Is that the word?
It is the word.
Like, you know, wait, did I touch the cart and did I disinfect this? And there's the door handle. And what about this? I touched the trunk when I opened it up to put the groceries in. And people, I think, are getting creative in ways to try to socialize. Last night, you got together with your whole freaking family on Zoom.
On Zoom. Yeah, that was fun. That was a good time.
It was neat. I mean, they're scattered from the West Coast to the East Coast and in between. And they had, I don't know, eight of those little thumbnails up, and everybody's talking. You guys are playing games and doing your things. So I guess they just hooked my mom up on some kind of similar deal.
You and probably won't be invited to that.
And my mom unfriended me on Facebook. Well, I mean, just real fast, I'll tell you the story. So, you know, my mother is in her 80s, and they finally got her on social media. It's one of those things, it's almost like when you show your parent how to program the Blu-ray player. You just have to go set it up for them and then give them the remote. All right, this is start, this is stop, this is on, this is off. This is how my parents do social media. My mother, actually, she's the only one on. And so she got a Facebook account and she followed my page for how long she last, honey?
A couple days.
2 days?
Yeah.
And she was gone. I mean, because I'm just not her speed. Not only am I, you know, an atheist, but I'm a liberal. And I have a really sharp, I like, just the humor I like is just kind of wrong. You know what that's like? I mean, did you say it's kind of wrong?
Sometimes. Well, for your mom, it would be.
Like when I posted David Manning the other day, the pastor who was talking about the sodomites. He's talking about the sodomites and the flames coming out of their butthole. Have you seen the David Manning? No. You got to go to YouTube and and search it. Pastor David Manning, sodomites.
I got a word from you. I got a word of knowledge, a word of prophecy. And I want you, preacher, to use this word of prophecy ever, whithersoever you go. That God is going to put a burning. God's going to put a cancer in the butthole. God's going to put a cancer in the butthole of every sodomite. Every sodomite's butthole, everyone that practices sodomy from the day of this message will get cancer in the butthole right there. It'll burn and burn and burn. You'll have to, the manufacturers will have to go into manufacturing chairs where people can stand up because they won't be able to sit down because of the burning in their butthole. Every sodomite, that way we'll know it's a sodomite because he can't sit down. He can't sit down. He's got a burning in his butthole. He's got a fire. He's got a flame coming out of his butthole. He's got a flame. He's got to have special asbestos diapers. When God gets through with the sodomite, this is the word of the Lord. This is the prophecy of Almighty God.
And there's a whole litany of videos that come up where he's just losing his shit about those sodomites and the long-legged Mac Daddy, is what he calls Obama. And then he talks about how that the sodomites are going to have actual flames coming out of their butthole and that they're going to need asbestos diapers. That's funny to me. So I post that. I post that stuff on my page. Well, you know, to the pious, you know, to the frozen chosen. This is kind of hardcore stuff. And then you use, you know, specific choice words, colorful language. And you know, I got unfriended pretty quick. We're, you know, we're still getting along, but we're not Facebook friends. So, I don't know how you've been filling the time. We've been, what have we been doing? You know, we mostly been dealing with the big questions, like, is cereal a soup? Somebody asked me that the other day, and I actually had to stop and think about it. Cereal, is it soup?
You could spill it on yourself.
Like it's a liquid with stuff in it, but is it soup?
It's a milk soup.
So it's soup. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Like a taco?
Is a taco a sandwich?
I don't think so. I think a taco is a taco.
What's the difference?
Bread.
But you've got a tortilla, which is bread. Like, it wraps around the ingredients in the middle. It folds around it. No, I don't know the answer to this. Is a taco a sandwich? Is a hot dog actually is a better argument because you've got the bread, right? You've got the bun that folds around the hot dog. I'm watching the chat. No, capital no. Is a corn dog a popsicle? That's a good question.
Do you want to know the best thing I found today? And this is going to be helpful to some of you out there. If you have an iPhone, if you text the words pew pew, P-E-W space P-E-W, it will give you and whoever you text it to a laser show. Make sure your sound is on.
She told me, go check your phone. And so she sent me pew, pew, and pew, pew. There was this light laser show on my phone. Cheap thrill.
Best part of the day.
But it's awesome. It's awesome. Anyway, thanks for joining me for show 500. And
thanks for having me.
It's also kind of a special day. It's a birthday show for me. I have a birthday hat. And I have my birthday horn. I'm not going to wear this for the show. But
you're going to have to bend down to see.
Can everybody see the can? I've got candles on the hat. It's really kind of pathetic looking.
Sequestered birthdays.
Well, like I've got the horn and whatnot. But I can't have a party. I can't have all of my local friends over and our tennis buddies. It's a weird time. And like, and you see people, they've got special occasions of all shapes and stripes, and their kids have a special birthday or something happened, and they can't really do much about it. I'm not hugely sentimental about birthdays. Natalie's more sentimental than I am about it. She got me some tennis clothes, tennis shoes, which came in the mail. Thank you for those.
See, the box comes to the door, and you know, you've got to let it air out or whatever so that you don't get contaminated. He goes and picks it up at the door and opens it. And I'm like, what are you doing?
It had my name on it.
He goes, it has my name on it. I was like, well, that's your birthday present. And his birthday's not until Sunday. So his birthday's on Easter, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was going to wrap everything up.
You were grieved by it.
A little bit grieved. So now I'm thinking, okay, so do I need to go out and get another gift for Sunday so you can
You got me a gift. Look, I opened
a box. Yes, they were short shorts, Kelly.
I opened a box and there was a gift inside, and it's a great gift, and I'm so thankful for it. But I felt like you were grieved that it wasn't wrapped and didn't have a bow and there wasn't a card. Like, it's not like Christmas where you put it under the tree and it's decoration for 30 days. I mean, I got to open a box. Well, so it's all good. You know what else I asked for? I asked for those kitchen gloves, the ones that you wear while using sharp kitchen knives. And the reason is, I'm a dumbass. Tell them what happened.
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm in the other room. This was a couple weeks ago. And I hear, God damn it. I go, did you cut yourself?
Tell them what I was using when I did it.
So we have this little mandolin thing. And whenever he bought it, you know, it's this $5 plastic mandolin. And he buys it years ago and says, now, honey, when you use this, you need to make sure you use this little guard so you don't cut your finger. So I have, like, for years, I always make sure that I have that little guard and I, you know, slice the potatoes or the onions with the guard on. So I hear, God damn it. I was like, did you cut yourself? And he's like, yeah, I was cutting a potato. And I was like, were you using the guard? And he goes, no.
Just, I'm a ditz. Like, I'm not stupid.
So he asks for, so he cuts off the tip of his finger.
It's healed. It's mostly healed up now. But I actually did remove a portion of the end of my finger, bled like a mother, and I finally got it to stop bleeding. And you don't realize how often, like, I know we're not supposed to touch things, but it just makes life hard when you can't use, and plus it's your middle finger, so, you know, you're always flipping people off when you're showing them the wound. But, you know, I just got in a hurry. And I don't know if you've seen those kitchen mandolins. They will flat take your finger off. And there are horror stories of people who have done this. They just get in there and they start slicing up their veggies. And before you know it, they've literally dismembered themselves. Some people throw them away because they're too dangerous for the kitchen.
Well, if you use the guard guard. So he asks for these gloves that you can't cut yourself when you're wearing them, but I'm pretty sure.
No. They're like,
that you're not going to be wearing those gloves either.
No, I'll wear the gloves.
No, because see, Seth is, he's all about doing things fast.
It's true.
And so he wants to just grab it, cut, and go. You're not going to go into the drawer and find the glove.
After losing the tip of my middle finger, trust me, I will take the time to put the freaking glove on. But they have gloves. I don't know if they're made of chainmail or what they are. But you put them on while you're using your kitchen knives. Because I like to work in the kitchen, you know. My cooking has gotten better since we met. Some people ask, and we'll get into our relationship a little bit if you have, like, questions and the switchboard's open and I'm watching the chat. But, you know, I have evolved, and I think she has evolved from where we were when we first met. I cook, or can cook now, as opposed to back in the day. What did I used to cook? Tell him.
He would make tilapia in the microwave. And I don't know if any of you guys have ever done that. I've never witnessed it, but evidently it explodes.
Well, because I was built for speed.
Yeah.
I wanted fast, and I didn't want to have to, you know, heat up the broiler and do all that stuff. So I used to put it on a plate, cover it, put it in the microwave. And, you know, that shit explodes. Like, tilapia explodes in the microwave. So there's bits of fish all over the freaking oven. What else did I do? Just a lot of fast stuff.
You know, he So he made me a grilled cheese. And some people say, hey, if your husband makes you a grilled cheese and packs it in your lunch and sends you to work, it's the best grilled cheese ever.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, Biddy. It was in the microwave. I think you guys have actually heard this story. But so what he does is he will toast the bread separately in the toaster. And then he'll take that and put it in the microwave with a piece of cheese on it. And then he'll microwave it. And then he sticks it in a baggie hot and sends it to work with you. So by the time 3 hours later comes, it's this mushy, wet.
That was a mistake. I learned my lesson on that. And I've seen the error of my ways. It used to be, I thought, toast the bread, throw some cheese between it, maybe a little bit of butter, microwave it so that the cheese melts, bam, grilled cheese.
Oh, I forgot. You do, after he toasts the bread, then he puts the butter on it.
After I toast the bread? Yeah. The bread's hot and a little bit of butter on it so that the butter melts and then you melt the cheese.
That is the worst way to make a grilled cheese.
Okay, you're right. No, you're right.
But I appreciate the thought.
And my heart was in the right place when I made you lunch that day.
Yes.
But I've gotten better. I cook a grilled cheese in the pan. And like there was a time she would never eat off a paper plate. Now, I got her buying like 150 at a time. She's like, I need to get paper plates. You know, so we both adjusted just a little bit. Yeah. I don't know. we are very different people. A lot of people know that, you know, Natalie and I come from very different points of view when it comes to like religion and whatnot. Natalie, and she doesn't mind me telling you, she's not an atheist. She is much more, how do I phrase this? You are more open, perhaps?
I guess I'm more open, more accepting.
You're not concerned about, I mean, if somebody wants to believe whatever they believe, it's no skin off your teeth.
It's not.
And
but that's why I have you. We kind of balance each other out a little.
And she softened me a little bit. I mean, I'm guilty of thinking, and I'm right, by the way, that everything's a debate. Like everything is an opportunity to find out if it's real or if it's true or if it's right. And I don't care if it's a subjective opinion or not. I will argue it with you. You know, who's the best captain on Star Trek? We can have that conversation. I'll talk to you for weeks about shit like that. We can talk about guacamole and why it is the devil's vomit. We can talk about that all day. We can debate it all the time. And I'm wired for that. You know, one thing I think I get from Mom is I'm kind of a crusader. And when I was in Christian radio, I was a crusader. And when I was, you know, like activism for Jesus, you know, when I was a kid as a member of Youth for Christ and all that stuff, I was a student leader, I was a crusader, and here I am on the other side of the bubble. But I just had that activist streak in me where you don't. And I know it's got to be tough if we're going to be honest. I mean, it's hard to live with an activist, right?
Sometimes it is. I mean, I know how to push Seth's hot buttons, and this is one of them. But I always say, I'm a Libra. I require balance. And his head will explode. But it's kind of true. You know,
You just say it just to piss me off.
I do. But, you know, I didn't grow up in a religious family. I mean, my family was filled with preachers and things like that. But by the time my mother had children, she was forced to go to church all the time. And so that was the last thing she was going to do. So we were the only people that I knew that didn't have a church home. And
no, wait, you so know, your growing mom, up. Your mom was forced. And so she quit when she got older?
Yeah. I mean, my mom was, she loves the Lord, but she does, you know, she was a party girl. You know, when I was growing up, we didn't go to church. And so I always felt like there was something wrong with us, you know.
Because
we weren't a part of it. And
it's not like your mom is Bible literate, though. Like,
no, not at all.
She knows, how do they say it? Fuck all about the Bible.
Right.
But she had that kind of cultural, I went to church because it's what Christians do.
Right. And I think a couple of generations before her were Christian Scientology. And I mean, they were pretty hardcore. So I think she just, you know, once my parents got divorced when I was like 2 years old. And I think, you know, we just grew up differently.
Yeah.
And I was around snippets of all different types of diverse beliefs, just, you know, I think I was the kid in the neighborhood that all the parents felt sorry for. You know,
you?
Mm-hmm. Because I didn't have a dad. I didn't.
He left early. Yeah, he was out of the picture for a while.
Yeah, you know, we grew up poor, and my mom was always working. I was a latchkey kid, and so I think those parents felt sorry for me. So they would kind of scoop me up and tell me the good word and then send me home. But, you know, it just never registered. Like, it wasn't drilled into me like it was you and a lot of your listeners. So maybe I dodged a little bit of a bullet, you know.
I think our backgrounds being so different there was a little bit of a language barrier that we had to overcome, because it was hard for you to relate to the level of indoctrination that I came out of.
And I'm still surprised by some of it. You know, I hear stories of, you know, when you're not a part of that group or you're not a part of the conversation, you don't really understand the damage that you feel that it's done to you and the damage that other people feel like it's done to them being brought up in cultish like homes.
Cultish is a damn good word.
And I learned that from you. But you know what I'm saying? It's a different, whenever you don't see all of that or when you're not around it, it's hard to understand the hurt that it causes. I mean, I remember you telling me a long time ago that when you were a child, you grew up thinking you were going to go to hell unless you repented 100 times a day.
Yeah.
And prayed for forgiveness. And I mean, I never had that, you know? And so
you guys went to church on Sunday and then it was.
No, we didn't.
I mean, like, but even after.
We went to church maybe on Easter.
Like, but
maybe.
You became a church goer.
I did whenever I was older.
But even then you were going, but you guys weren't doing like deep theology. You weren't pouring through the book of Leviticus and, you know, you guys weren't fundamentalists.
We were the name it and claim it people. You know, we were going on that.
Ooh. You've been watching those Kenneth Copeland videos?
No.
That man is, I don't know. I saw him at Meta call him a scam evangelist, and I tend to agree. He was spitting on the coronavirus the other day. He was literally spitting out at it.
Spreading it.
One of those things is contaminating us with, I guess, God's breath. Now, if I can interject into the conversation here, somebody made an auto-tune of the sermon that he gave on TV.
Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord. From the state of Washington to the state of Maine to Brownsville, Texas, and the tip of Florida. Today, we speak to this atmosphere. Today, burn this thing. This virus hates heat. You just burn this thing. Burn, burn. I call for a supernatural heat wave straight out of hell. Burn, burn.
Oh, yeah.
COVID-19.
I'll link that in the description box for you. It's much better visually. It's wild. Anyway,
I don't know what he was trying to accomplish. But when you saw me, and I would try to communicate to you, I'd be like, well, it was really different. Mom was a Greek New Testament teacher, and Dad once tried to memorize the whole book of Revelation.
I mean,
I think he got through, I think he got up to chapter 7, memorized, of all books, too. What a crazy LSD trip Revelation is. I just did some commentary on the Thief and the Night films, right? I was telling you about, well, they showed these films when I was in high school, and you're like, holy shit.
But then, so my grandmother, when I was like 12, sent me and my cousin and I, to Falls Creek, which is a big
Baptist youth camp
here, which was hell for me because I am not a camper. I'm a straight up city girl. But I think they did show that show.
Oh, Thief in the Night?
I think they did because I remember bits and pieces of it. But the difference between like maybe you and I, like you, it scared you. And I was thinking,
this bullshit.
I was kind of thinking, it would be scary, but it's just a movie. Like I had that separation of probably because I just didn't know you know, I hadn't been taught up with that hardcore, you're going to go to hell.
I'd been primed.
Nobody had told me that.
Yeah.
You know?
No, we had hardcore. I mean, it was hell theology. Now, my parents don't really agree on the nature of hell. Dad thinks hell is fire and pain and torture and death. And he loves the God who's going to send me there. Somebody explain this to me. I think Mom believes hell is separation from God, which is supposed to be just as bad. But it's interesting to see two supposed theological experts who can't even agree on the basics of their faith. And it's been challenging. But you've seen the conversations, right? She's heard the raised voices, been on the phone, you know, trying to have a conversation about boundaries. Let me live my life and stop calling me shameful and do all those other things. And, you know, and I haven't been at my best. There are a lot of those conversations I'd like to go back and do over, you know, but I mean, it's so hard when you feel like, well, when you know you are not being accepted for who you are, they won't fully accept you unless you are them.
Yeah. And that's just sad. Like, and a lot of different people, even, you know, obviously religion, you know, lifestyle choices. There's a lot of discrimination where people just have, they need you to be just like them in order to coexist. And
I think that's insecurity in a lot of cases.
I do too. And if we were all alike, I mean, how great would that be?
I'm all about diversity. Now, I do think that people get respect, but ideas have to earn it. So we can get into, is this true? Is there any reason to believe it is true? You know, I think those are valid conversations. It doesn't mean that I want everyone to be the same. Yeah. And I think more than anything else, your life belongs to you. Natalie, your life belongs to you. My life belongs to me. And that's one thing that Natalie has given to me that I wish many in the rest of my family would learn, especially Mom and Dad, is that she knows my life belongs to me. And if she disagrees, and sometimes I drive her crazy, and I'm not always easy to live with, and blah, 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 or she just thinks that idea is wrong or whatever, she still comes back and she's like, well, you know, you're you. You do you the way you think you need to be done. I don't know if that's, am I saying that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of people that, I'm not going to say that you've helped, but I hear them, you know, when we go out to your events, you've helped people, and your mom's not going to do that. You know what I mean? That's something that only you're going to do.
You know, I was this is a true story. I was in Wichita. I told you this.
Did you just give me a weird look?
No.
Was that the wrong thing to say?
No, I didn't. Did I give you a weird look?
You were like,
No, I just had a thought.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I had a gear shift in my head. I was in Wichita. I guess it's been a few years. And someone in the Q&A asked me about the relationship with my parents, because I'm pretty candid on the radio. And I vent, and I know you're probably tired of hearing about it, you know. Hardcore theologians and all the arguments we've had and how frustrating it is and blah, blah, blah. So I had a question about my parents in the Q&A, and the event ended, and I went to the lobby, and I was working the table, selling a book or whatever. And a woman came up to me. Her name was Brenda, and she was probably in her late 60s, and she said to me, I just want you to know that if I was your mother, I would be so very proud. Mm. I get choked up just thinking about
it.
I started bawling. Like, I just, it was so unexpected, and it was so generous, and it was just this gift. And to say that to me, I hugged her, and, you know, I will never forget that as long as I live. Mm. That, I think, is a microcosm of what this community has sort of been for me. You know, I was reaching out back when I started the website at a time when I felt like I had very few people anywhere to mm-hmm. talk about this stuff with. And so now, you know, I'm surrounded by people, and many of us have the same types of stories. We can come together and we're like a support group, mm-hmm. you know. Hi, I'm Seth. Former Christian, I've been sober for 13 years, that kind of thing. So anyway, but I don't know. I appreciate the fact that Natalie, you know, She's still with me. She's still kicking. Would you have, like, before we had met, if you had met me, you know, I was, I think when we first met, still sort of coming out of my...
I do remember when you told me. We were sitting in a car.
I told you that I was going to do a website or a podcast,
no,
or when I told you that I didn't believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
And what was your response? You were probably scared or confused or...
Yeah, it was shocking because I have never really met anybody who didn't.
That you knew about.
That I knew about. That's
so true. If I'd said, hey, you want to go out to dinner or whatever, and you'd known beforehand I was an atheist.
So here's how we met, Kelly. We met on the tennis court, court 11.
I was the fill-in girl.
He was the fill-in girl. And I don't know, maybe 6 months after that. So I knew Seth for maybe 6 months to a year before this all happened. Is that right?
Yeah, something like
before
that.
Before you told me that you were like, I don't think I believe that there's a God. And he wouldn't say the word atheist because it was such an ugly word.
It's not an ugly word,
but
it's a scary word.
It's a scary word for an Oklahoma person. And honestly, back then, if I were the same person back then, no, I probably wouldn't have.
But do you figure I'm going home and having baby salad kind of thing?
Yes, baby salad. That's exactly what that word meant. You ate babies. And I don't think I would have been friends with you anymore had I had not known you first.
Now, how have your perceptions then changed? Because, like, we hung out in Australia with Matt Dillahunty and Aaron Raw, and they've taken you under their wing and vice versa, and you've met people in this community. I mean, your perceptions have changed.
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing how they've
changed. Like, people are people.
Well, no, they're not. They are in a sense, but they're not. So here's the deal. So years before Seth and I met, I was at Rhema. I don't know if you guys know Rhema, but Google it.
I want to editorialize so bad here. All right, I will, just for a second. Rhema, Bible Training Center, is kind of like a Kenneth Copeland kind of a place. They do speaking in tongues and dancing. They did the Toronto Blessing, you know, where people are like getting high in the Holy Spirit and dancing around and flailing and... I know the Toronto Blessing in Canada, some of the incarnations of that, they were barking like dogs and carrying. I don't know if Rhema ever went that far.
No, they didn't go that far, but they were out there. They were definitely charismatic.
They are still out there. Okay, yes. I'm done. Go ahead.
So anyways, that's where I came from, not too long before we met, really. Sorry, I know. He instructed me, don't hit the microphone.
I just hit the microphone. Just sometimes you don't realize it happens. I do the same thing. So you were there years before we met.
So yes, an atheist person I had never been around and did not know anybody. And you probably didn't either.
That I knew about.
To be honest with you. But through this endeavor that you put together, and I was there at the beginning of the Thinking Atheist when you were doing the videos. It's kind of started out with your videos and we'd talk about that. And, you know, I was shocked and didn't really know how I felt about it. But, you know, as everything kind of evolved and I met the people that you were connecting with and heard their stories and how they and heard your more about your story and how everything comes together. And then, you know, I meet people like Matt, who will probably be my next husband, is what he told me.
He flirts with my wife.
He tells me, if anything ever happens to Seth, don't worry, I'm your backup.
I'm right here. I'm the safety net. If I disappear, people, I want you to go and check out what's going on.
But here's the thing. Whenever I was going, you know, I gave my life money for years and years to Rhema. I had a lot invested emotionally, mentally. And when I went through my life change years before, guess who wasn't there? My church, because now I'm taboo because I'm a divorcee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the difference between, in my opinion, I think the religious people are very judgmental and you have to fit in this box in order to be accepted sometimes. And what I have found differently with your community is you know, these people are the same things that I loved about the church. Their community, they're obviously givers. We've seen that in so many different ways. They're
the Henry
supportive.
Band. Yeah,
yeah. I haven't seen one person eat a baby. I mean, so yeah, my opinion of people are people, and people genuinely want to be good, whether they're atheist or, you know, Christian or
now look at me coming
Buddhist
to the defense
or whatever.
Of believers. There are some cultures, though, that they won't cast you off in the church. You know, they're not going to cast you off. I think, though, that your particular
microcosm,
those people, particular group, they were mm-hmm. very much, if you're not with us, you're against us.
Yeah, and I was hurt by all of that, you know, and yeah. it just kind of showed me you can give and you can invest in people, but if they're not invested back in you, it's probably a one-sided relationship.
Was it that you weren't validating them, or do you feel like they felt you were damaged goods?
I mean, I know
you're subjective, you're guessing, but
I don't really know. The way I guess I felt was you put so much time. I mean, we were at that church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday, you know, we headed up a lot of different groups. There was money, you know, there was a lot of things. And so in my time of need, not one of those motherfuckers reached out to me. Can I say that? I say that in love.
You can say whatever you say. I say that in love,
but not one motherfucker called me whenever I was hurting. And, you know, I was a single mom, had never had a job. What am I going to do? You know?
So the second you didn't look and sound like them. Mm-hmm. You were out. You were part of the out group.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody in this group, I mean, just like Matt, if you're gone, Matt's there for me.
I'm uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable.
I'm just saying.
This,
you know,
by the way, we're all just kidding. But
yeah, we are just kidding.
So, I mean, well, I think people can be tribal. Atheists aren't immune from tribalism. And I've seen some atheists who lock out people who are not. But I think you're right in that there are other – the church is rigged to be – I'm going to open up a can of worms here.
Can I just say, I feel like people in the church, when you go to church on Sunday, you're going to look the part, you're going to act the part, even though you may have been fighting right before you walked in the door. With the atheist community, I just feel like people are just more real because they can be. You know what I mean?
I buy that. There's another phenomenon going on, too, I think. I think that, would it be fair to say that you are not religious, but you are spiritual?
That would be...
Okay. Yeah. I'm not misrepresenting you.
No.
Mm-mm. So, you know, you aren't dogmatic.
I have a voodoo doll, and I'm not afraid to use it.
She wants a Buddha.
I have a Buddha.
You got a Buddha statue?
I hide it. I got an atheist.
You don't have to hide the Buddha statue. I'm all about Buddhism as far as a philosophy. I'm not threatened by Buddha. I'm not threatened by the voodoo doll, any of that stuff.
You should be.
I'm just saying. But
no, I've got all my bases covered.
One thing that religion is really good at, it's really good at community building. But I have become convinced, and this, I don't know what Natalie's take is going to be on this. I am convinced that religion divides more than it unites, because it is intrinsically tribal. In this town, honey, if you go to the First Baptist Church and you hop in your car and you drive half a block, you run into the Second Baptist Church and the Pentecostal Church, right? And the Ramas and the Catholic and the Episcopals. And I mean, and all of these churches disagree and everybody's sort of cordoned off, and they found reasons not to unite, which you would think the faith itself would be united. They're really divided. Add in the fact that there are non-Christians and atheists that they stand apart from. And I really do think a lot of these religious exercises are unity in sort of a small sense, but in a large sense, they divide more than they unite. Is that fair?
I mean, when's the last time we've been into a church? So I don't know, but yeah.
I mean, I just think it's all about in-group, out-group. And there are some exceptions. There are some tremendously generous and magnanimous churches. Hell, my next-door neighbor is a church guy, and he's just a beautiful guy. He's just a fan. He's one of my favorite people. And I always try to throw those caveats out as an atheist activist, because I want to make sure that we are not misrepresenting people of faith. There are a lot of really bad arguments for atheism out there. I've seen the one where there's an, I forget what you call it. What do they call it when the first letter spells out a word and it's like a skeptical thinker, something, 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 and it spells out atheist? That's not true. Not automatically true. Religion is a mental illness. That's a terrible argument. It's completely false. Religion is not a mental illness. Religion is an idea. There's a litany of bad reasons, bad arguments that atheists bring in, and a lot of misrepresentations of religious people. And I'm like, you know, I think we need to be talking more and relating more. What are you laughing at?
I'm just reading.
Anagram. Is it anagram or acronym? What is it? What is it called when the first letter of each word spells out a separate word? Anagram? Acronym? He's got a question mark in the chat. Oh, I'm going to get an email on this one. Don't send me an email. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. All right. What was I talking about, babe?
I don't know. He talks so much that sometimes I'm blocking out. And I was doing that because I was lost in the... Somebody's poking you with their doll right now, by the way, with a pen.
Tell them about the voodoo doll.
What about it?
Tell them... You want to tell the story? How
no,
you got
go ahead.
It?
Go ahead.
So we went to Eureka Springs, spent a weekend there. It's a woo-filled town. There is New Age shit everywhere, and the whole city is covered in the smell of weed. Okay? But it's also lovely, and we got like this old treehouse cottage thing that you can rent, and you know, you're out on the porch, and there's deer, and they're all frolicking around and all that stuff. And we went to a magic show, which was pretty good. And the souvenir was a voodoo doll. And it came with pens in it. There are pens that you can stick in it. And an instruction book. What did the instructions say? Something like, only use this doll for good. I think it's what it said.
Yeah, and then you got to bury it or something.
When you're done, if you're done with it, you bury it.
Yeah.
There's like a specific
disposal.
There's
like a whole thing that you have to do.
So we had some believing friends over, some Christian friends over, and Natalie told them we had a voodoo doll in the house. And I shit you not, they were genuinely...
I thought they were going to leave.
They were genuinely uncomfortable. Do you think they thought there was power imbued in the doll?
I don't know what they were thinking, but I went and got it because the guy hurt his elbow. And I told him I was going to fix his elbow. And I started. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Did not think it was funny. He
was
didn't laugh.
Genuinely
like,
weird.
Yeah.
Genuinely weird.
So I kept texting him pictures of it after they left.
The voodoo doll?
He never responded.
See, that's fun for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I can do that. Yeah. Whatever. We both know that it's bullshit.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a Ouija board in the house. I draw the line there.
Really?
Yeah. Do you have one up here?
No, I don't have a Ouija board. But if I brought a Ouija board over...
If your mom ever came over, I might bring out a Ouija board and a voodoo doll.
No, you know what? If she comes over, I think Buddha needs to greet her at the door.
Definitely.
You know, that's healthy for her. My mother, for a while, would not walk in my house. Okay? I was trying to extend the olive branch. Would you like to come over, you and Dad? And we had this weird conversation where she said... Well, you bought that house, and I know what you do for a living. And I was connecting the dots in my mind. And all of a sudden, I realized she thinks that Satan pays the bills, that Satan bought the house, like Satan's money, blood money, devil money, Beelzebub's money, bought my house. And for that reason, she did not want to come and walk across the threshold. And I'm like... Well, look, when we bought the house and furnished it, we split the furniture. Like, I bought the couch.
You can sit on this chair, but not this chair.
She bought the kitchen table. You know what? That's the Jesus table. You go sit at the Jesus table. I'll go over here on the devil couch. You know, who bought the stools in the kitchen? Did you buy those?
I bought one. You bought two. Take your pick.
You sit on this stool. This stool is not infected with evil. But this one is, so it's problematic. So just, you know, show her where the danger spots. How insecure is she about the power of God if she thinks that just walking in my house is dangerous in some way? Like, her theology has told her that God has already defeated the devil anyway. God is infinitely more powerful than Satan. The battle is already won. This is a common saying among the theists, Christian people, fundamentalists anyway. And yet she's freaked out about walking in the door. That seems to me a contradiction. It's up there with God gives me divine protection. By the way, I need my loaded handgun.
But she does not keep the bullets in the gun.
I am, if I'm lying, I'm dying. I can't believe I'm saying
this. There's a little bit of faith to that.
I actually wrote about this in my upcoming book, so I'll tell it on the radio real fast, okay? Because you brought it up. Well, I brought it up, then you took it a step further. So I don't know if Mom's a big NRA person, National Rifle Association, but I think they're a hideous, awful gun cult tied to the evangelical right. They're a fear-pimping cult, in my opinion. And after we saw the videos from Dana Loesch, et cetera, we saw some real examples of extremely problematic behavior. Now, some might consider it to be hypocritical, but I own a couple of firearms. I have a couple of pistols. I shoot rarely, target shooting, trained to use them, have a tremendous respect for them. The guns are not part of my identity. And controversially, if I was asked by my community to give those guns up for the safety of other people, I would probably do so. But this is a gun culture. It's Oklahoma. Like, the gun rack usually comes standard on the pickup truck when you drive it off the lot, right? So Mom's got a pistol that she keeps in her purse. Not because she lives in fear. I think it's more of an expression of her personal liberties, mm-hmm. right? This is America, Jack. Second Amendment, I'm going to get me a gun, I'm going to carry it with me. So she was showing everybody her firearm, and it's like a little .22 pistol. Pew, pew, pew. She's like, now, I said, Mom, is that thing loaded? And she said, hang on just a second. No, I don't keep it loaded. The bullets are down, now they're down here in my purse somewhere. And she takes her purse out, she said, down here, hang on just a second. And she's like, she's digging around the bottom of the purse, and I'm like, okay. If you were ever mugged by a sloth, your gun, unloaded weapon, might actually come in handy. And so I don't know if she's still got that weapon even now, but that's just a funny gun story. I don't have it.
Back to the laser show.
Real short break. I'll be right back as we continue the party. Celebration of show number 500. Natalie joins me for even more of your calls and whatever else is on the table. I'll be right back after this. Perhaps the best birthday gift you can give me is to become a patron, if you can. I know these are trying times. I know that some people are really on the bubble. Take care of your people first. But if you're able, your support is hugely appreciated at patreon.com/Seth Andrews. You get the show early and you get it totally commercial free. patreon.com/Seth Andrews. Continuing show 500, Natalie joins me as we talk about whatever happens to come up. And we take more of your calls. We're very different people. Sometimes those differences are front and center. I mean, we've had some long-ass conversations, sometimes intense, passionate conversations about the things that matter. And people are always like, well, how do you two make it work? Y'all are so in love. And I'm like, well, we very much are. I mean, she's my darling. But there's also times when, anytime you put two complex people in the same space, and one of them is an activist like me. We've had to work on language barriers between us and being able to ask questions and try not to. She says I have hot buttons.
He does.
I have hot buttons. What's a hot button? Go ahead.
I don't know. I was just trying to go through my Rolodex and be like, do you want to see one?
she mentioned the other day, if we're watching the news and I see some tornado hits church, Bible saved from rubble.
It goes like this. You got to be shitting me. And then he'll just blah, blah, blah.
You got to be shitting me. Honey, that doesn't make any sense. I'm very much that way. Plane crashes. 197 people killed. One woman miraculously survives. And I'm like, miraculously, there are 197 corpses on the plane. And Natalie just looks at me with this sort of amused, like, you can't fix this.
We'll be watching a movie and they'll be praying in the movie and he'll go off. They'll be sitting at the dinner table praying.
No, if yes. somebody prays it in the film.
Mm-hmm. You got to be shitting me. That he
no,
says that
not if somebody if somebody prays as part of the story. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he does. And I've said something to you while we're watching a show. It's like, you can't even watch the show without.
What were they praying?
I don't remember.
Look, if it's like the Thief in the Night movie.
It was not.
It wasn't the Thief in the Night movie, but there was a scene, like, I'll tell you. When a guy gets bitten by a snake, a cobra, in the film, and they whisk him off to the hospital, and all the Jesus freaks come over, and they're all praying for him. Dear Jesus, we ask that you help heal him from the snake bite. They don't talk like that. It's just funnier when I do it that way. Meanwhile, a guy who has the anti-venom gets on a plane and flies his ass cross-country, lands, goes in, they inject it into his body, science saves his life, and who do they thank when it's over? Jesus. That shit makes me crazy.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about.
That makes
me
crazy.
Thank you for articulating that.
Look, my dad was just in the hospital. And I get it. You want to pray for him? If that makes you happy, if it gives you comfort, whatever. But when no one mentions the doctors as he is receiving 24-hour-a-day care, I feel my blood go up. That's a hot button. Is that a hot button for me?
That is a hot button. And of course, whenever I want to push those buttons, I'll say, the doctors don't care. They're not looking for anything.
She does it on purpose, too. And I'm trying to be cool, but I'm just saying.
You're cool.
I do have my mom, and that's the activist in me. And, you know, sometimes it's, I know sometimes I need to cool my jets. Sometimes everything is not a debate, except that everything's a debate. Everything's a debate. Let me put my headphones on real fast, and we'll take a couple of calls. You want to talk to the...
We all know that nurses really do all the work anyways, right?
Talk to the world and see what everybody else is doing on this fine 500th broadcast. 423. Hi, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Hello?
Hey, who's this?
Hello? Yeah, I called a month or two back. I went by Eddie then, so I guess we'll stick to that.
Eddie, thanks for calling. What do you have for us today?
Well, first of all, happy birthday or early birthday or late birthday, whatever that's fallen.
Thanks, Sonny.
And happy 500th.
Much appreciated.
Just thanks for all you've done with over 500 episodes. And those Thief in the Night commentaries you've been doing the last couple days, please do more of those.
Do you like those?
Those are amazing. I love those.
I didn't know if people would stick with me for 2 hours of live commentary. You know, 2 hours a film. I don't know if I'd keep your interest or not.
It was hilarious. If you could tackle, like, the Estes Perkel trilogy, I'm pretty sure those are public domain. I'd like to see your take on that guy.
By the way, for those who don't know who Estes Perkel is, I think he had some serious perversions. I don't know what his problem was, but he put together these...
The guy...
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. The guy looks like Colonel Sanders if he shaved and started diddling kids.
He is a... what? He put together these fear videos where in the end days, they would torture people in these horrible ways. They're sticking twigs in their eye sockets and just crazy shit. And this guy was a preacher. And the way he produced these films really made me think that he was a sociopath. There's something tremendously wrong with the man. So,
do you know how he got the know-how to get all that blood and all the effects, like the chopping the kid's head off and sticking pencils in their eye?
How?
Turns out, so I don't remember the guy's name, but he got in contact with exploitation director who survived a plane crash and was born again or whatever the fuck. So that guy, they hooked up, and that's how he was able to get all the effects and the blood and the practical
stuff.
So,
wait a minute. Hang on. Estes Perkel ended up collaborating with an exploitation, like a grindhouse filmmaker, and that's where he got...
Yeah, well, he was born again. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Born again.
The guy had to come to Jesus moment.
Something.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, so that's how he was able to get the technical know-how to get everything to look as... Oh, what's the word? Visually stunning.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
Oscar
award-winning special effects of, it's pretty horrible. I don't know. I'll take a look at it. And you guys in the comment section, you tell me if you enjoyed those commentaries. I can do a specific playlist for certain types of films, and we can release those from time to time. It's something I enjoyed doing. I just wanted to make sure that the audience enjoyed watching and listening. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know about the rest of the audience, but I did. I know you probably were able to do those because quarantine gives you more time, but if you could tackle the Estes Perkel trilogy, that would make my year.
I will make a note. Appreciate your call, man.
All right. Yep. Anyway, I got a baby steak that's getting cold, so I'll get off here.
Go get it. See you later, bro. All right. Bye. Estes Perkel. You know, talk about extreme. You thought my background was extreme. Estes Perkel is this guy who was just, I think he's just crazy. And he produced some genuinely offensive films designed to frighten people, often children, into rushing to the altar to accept Jesus. And the gist was, if you don't accept Jesus, you will be tortured in horrible ways. And these movies are out there, and they're just so freaking offensive, made even more so by the fact that they involve young children, which is a thing for me. Mm-hmm. Another hot button. Mm-hmm. I guess I have a lot of hot buttons. I've got 216 on the switchboard. Thanks for waiting on me. You're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Oh, hey, Seth. This is Eric from Cleveland.
Thanks for calling, Eric. You're on with me. You're on with Natalie. What do you think?
Hey, I was fortunate enough, I was able to meet you very briefly. You were in Michigan last summer. You gave a couple of speeches in Michigan. It was a good time had by all. I had a couple of questions for you, but I think the first one's already been kind of answered by the live stream. I had heard about Henry and Rat Dog, but I didn't know if you had a dog currently, and it looks like you were holding up a dog earlier, and I guess his name is Linus.
You want to tell him, honey?
Hey, Linus. You got to look over here, buddy.
It's hard to see him. He's totally black. He's got dark eyes, and we both have black clothing on, so he kind of disappears. We lost Henry and Rat Dog in late January, early February of last year. You guys might remember the effort where we all raised money for the Henry van. This community came through, and we weren't ready for a dog. We our hearts were broken. We just can't do it. And we got a message from the director of the Humane Society. What did she say? What did Gina say?
Yeah, we had just lost Tootsie about a week. And Gina sends me a message and she says, hey, I have your dog over here at my house. I want you to come look at him. And I was like, oh, no, we're not ready.
We're not ready.
You know, we're still crying every night and all of that. And she goes, no, I really think you need to come over and just see this dog. It's your dog. And she's the one that gave us Henry, so she knew. She's a good matchmaker. And we thought about it for a couple of days, and then we decided, okay, well, we'll go see the dog, but we're not interested. And so we go to her house, and then we see little Linus, and we leave. And we decided we're not going to take the dog. We're just not ready. Felt like a betrayal, you know, of Tootsie and Henry. And so that following weekend, we called her and we said, well, why don't we just let him come over for a visit?
Man, that's the worst thing to do. We'll just take him overnight.
We'll just take him for a night.
We'll just take him overnight. We'll just kind of see, you know, how he does.
And so on Valentine's Day of last year, we got Linus.
So that's his unofficial middle name.
Linus Valentino.
Was it Valentino?
Valentino.
Yeah. So he's just been the best little guy.
So you've had him over a year now, huh?
He has little bits of Henry and Rat Dog in him, plus a little bit of his own thing, and he is...
He's a good little guy.
He is He has his own webpage. If you go to SethAndrews.com, you'll find the Linus page, and we got all kind of photos and videos, and then the archive page, the legacy page for Henry and Rat Dog. But thanks for asking. No, he's my son, with whom I am well pleased. So
awesome. And really quick, congratulations on 500 episodes. Thank you for all the good work you do and continue to do. My other question really quick was, as you look back, do you have a particular episode of your podcast that was like your favorite, that you were the most proud of? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thanks for taking my call. It's nice talking to you.
Appreciate you very much. You take care.
You know what my favorite one is? It's not really a podcast, but his name slips my mind. Westboro.
Nate Phelps.
Nate Phelps. Nate, if you hear this, you need to come see us. We miss you. But didn't he read You Are Beautiful?
Yeah. Nate Phelps is the son of the late Fred Phelps, who founded the evil Westboro Baptist Church. And I've had Nate on the show, I think, a couple of times. Nate was trapped in this cult, this hate cult, when he was 18 at like the stroke of midnight. When he turned 18, he ran. He got out of there with nothing in his pocket and nowhere to go, really. But he escaped Westboro, and he built a life, and he built a record of real human rights activism on all of this, and has been standing out against hate for decades of his life. I love Nate Phelps. He was a guest at our house mm-hmm. back when we were over in BA.
Yeah.
He came over, and we broke bread with him. You know, we're all hanging out, and he's just a beautiful man. Just a beautiful guy.
I really liked that video.
I wrote a piece, and it probably is the defining piece of work as far as my value system and my mission is not the word, but you know what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's called Something Beautiful. And when I wrote it, I didn't hear my own voice in it. I heard Nate's. And so I wrote it for him, for his voice. And so I called him. I'm like, hey, buddy, I need a favor. Would you read something for me? And I sent him the project, and he's like, I'm in. But he lives in freaking Canada. So we recorded it as best we could with a lousy connection over Skype. I think there was like an air conditioner blowing in the background. You know, we had to go in.
I've never even noticed. Oh, did you edit it out?
I had to go and treat it. You can tell it's a little tinny. I mean, those who are listening who are audiophiles will notice that there's something else. But it's also extremely powerful. And his voiceover for the video, which you should look up on YouTube, Something Beautiful, talks about tribes and how hatred is so often taught to us when we are young. We are trained by our sometimes families, religions, cultures to look for reasons to splinter off and separate and not see the larger human condition. We are all the human condition. And the message of the video is that what if we could put aside all this hatred and we could find what is beautiful about each other? And it's like a 4 or 5 minute piece. It's probably one of the videos I'm most proud of.
It's definitely one of my favorites.
I didn't know that it resonated mm-hmm. with you like mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite?
I don't know if I can pick a favorite. Having done 500 shows, I work so hard to try to keep them interesting. And I know that it's not easy when you are an atheist, because there were only so many ways to say there's no evidence for any God anywhere. I mean, you cannot do a show on quote unquote atheism every week. And so I've really tried to mix it up. I do a lot of humanism these days. We've been doing some politics. I'm sure I've lost some listeners over that. But because the theocrats have infiltrated the GOP, and we're talking about the evangelical right and the legislation of a specific religion, we have to talk about that stuff. Some of the highlights for me have been the people I've gotten to meet. John DeLancey. John freaking DeLancey. Natalie will tell you, I was giddy.
I thought he was going to wet his pants.
I was so excited.
John DeLancey. And then who was the guy that you got to go to the food bank with?
The guy I got
the house guy.
Oh, I got to meet Hugh Laurie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He got to pack pasta with Hugh Laurie.
We were packing meals for the homeless at the American Atheist Convention, and right across from me is freaking Hugh Laurie. And I think I texted Natalie like...
He did.
Oh,
and snuck a picture.
My God.
I'm not supposed to say that online. Did you sneak a pic? He didn't sneak a picture.
Yeah. I snuck a picture.
Did you?
I think I may have snuck a picture. We had the little... the hats on, those little caps on you have to do for food handlers. And
then there was somebody else that called you and you like programmed their phone number. Was that John Delancey?
I talked to John Delancey.
Like, I got his number.
Penn Jillette. I'm talking to, oh yeah, I was talking to Penn Jillette. We were just hanging out. We were just doing our thing. Yeah. It's amazing. If you had tapped me on the shoulder 15 years ago and said, your life will look like this, and you get to meet these people, and not just the celebrities, but I mean, how about this community? And I'm not kissing your ass when I tell you the privilege of having connected with people all over the world. I don't think I would believe you. I certainly don't think I could fathom it. I couldn't really digest it. And there are listeners everywhere. I mean, they're everywhere. We were at dinner with our friends, right? Where I was Stu and Karen, mm-hmm. right? Somebody comes up out of the blue to our table. They're a listener. Hey, love the show. I mean, what are the chances? There's a guy who works at TSA at the airport, security. When I'm going through, he's like, hey, where are you heading off to speak this weekend? He knows. He's a listener. I mean, it's amazing.
It's like a down under club.
It's like we all
down low.
Like we're all waiting for our moment to come out, take over the universe kind of thing. So I don't know. I like the call-in shows quite a bit because they're dynamic and you never know what you're going to get. I love storytelling. I just released a few extra broadcasts just to help pass the time with some of our listeners where I read your favorite selections. Got to read some Sagan and Harlan Ellison and some H.P. Lovecraft and, you know, some classic authors. And you know, I'd like to do some more of those. I can't pick a favorite. It's like trying to pick the favorite of your children. I don't think you can.
Somebody's saying you look skinnier.
I'm sucking it in, baby. Like all the way up. I'm just saying. I've lost about, how much did I say? 30 something. We both did like a keto kind of thing. Like a healthy keto. Lean proteins kind of keto. And we had a lot of success, you know. And if you ever want to know what that program is, I mean, I don't know if I can I tell them? Because like ours was kind of physician supervised mm-hmm. kind of deal. But don't do the keto where you go out and you just eat shit. Like the cheese casserole bacon grease keto. Do not do that because that's not what we did. We just knocked the carbs way down, a lot of lean protein, drank a lot of liquid and tried to get active. Is that fair? Mm-hmm. Did I miss anything?
Mm-mm.
Just... carbs. I mean, you don't realize how many carbs are in things until you start counting them. Holy shit.
There's a lot of carbs.
We do that now.
It was a learning, we learned a new way to eat.
Is that it?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, we've been taught here, the American diet, you do big salad, big vegetables, little bitty portions of meat. And that works for some people. Vegan works for a lot of people. But I think different bodies are different. I mean, bodies are different.
Yeah.
And like my body doesn't do well with vegetables. My body does better with protein. And I think you just have to know what works for your body. But we did. I mean, the weight just, it completely fell off in about 3 months, right in the midsection for both of us.
You look good.
You do too.
Oh, things are getting hot. Things are getting steamy, babe.
So thanks for noticing.
A few more. 843. Thanks for waiting on me. You're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Hey, Seth. This is HR from Somerville, South Carolina.
Thanks for calling. What do you have for us tonight?
Honestly, I'm just calling, hoping for some of your smooth, comforting words, because I'm feeling a little crazy right about now.
What's making you crazy?
Well, I mean, I feel like religion is smacking us in the face even more, and the separation of church and state is just gone, and there's all kinds of prayer and God being thrown at us, and that doesn't exactly help.
Do you see that graph? It shows COVID-19, and it's down here, low, 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 and all of a sudden there's the National Day of Prayer. And then the curve goes way up and the cases skyrocket. And I had this conversation with my wife. Is there utility in asking the question, not does it give me comfort? Like, I know prayer gives comfort, and there may be some utility in that. We've had that conversation about people who, you know, prayer for them is an exercise. It's like meditation. It comforts them in times of stress and crisis and whatnot. I'm okay with that. I get that. But isn't there utility in asking if you believe in the power of prayer, right? As if you were reading out of the Bible, whatever you ask in my name, I will do it that the Father might be glorified in the Son. Is there utility in saying, does this shit work? And if you have a national day of prayer, why isn't COVID-19 gone? And this is another hot button for me.
I was just going to say, this is a perfect example how I can push the hot button.
Because whenever you go, people are like, please, Lord, we ask that the medicines will do their work. Please, Lord, guide the hands of the surgeon. I'm yelling out loud, if prayer worked, there would be no surgeon, right? It's like when Oral
Roberts.
It's
even worse than that, though.
The Oral
it's
Roberts.
It's so much worse than that.
The faith healer builds a hospital. You're a fucking a faith healer. You could lay hands on people and they're healed. Why would you need a hospital? I'm sorry. Go ahead. Complete your thought. Complete your thought. Forgive me.
No, it's okay. I appreciate the levity. Trust me, like I need it, so thank you. But it's worse than that. If they were just saying a prayer and that's of comfort to them, that's fine. But they're excluding everyone other than the Christian God of the Bible, and they're also coming out all these things. This is the atheist fault. This is the beginning of the apocalypse. This is this is the homosexual's fault. This is everybody's fault. Except for their God, of course. But so it feels worse right now.
What's happening?
And the other part that's making it hard for me is I'm still an in-the-closet atheist. I haven't figured out how to come out about it yet. And so I feel like I can't chime in as much.
And you feel even more isolated because you feel like you can't be yourself.
Yeah. And I mean, part of it is I have a lot of problems with fears and anxieties, and I do think part of that was because of the church. I went to a church when I was young, and then I was getting out of an abusive household, so I would walk up to a church, and then I got put into foster care and eventually got placed with Nazarene pastors. They're amazing, wonderful people. I still keep in touch with them, but they're Nazarene pastors. And my foster dad isn't doing so well. And I keep thinking, well, you know, I'll give him his time to not have to worry about my soul. But then I'm like, well, then there's my foster mom. And then there's this person and that person. And there's never going to be a right time for me to be me.
Yeah. I understand wanting to not trouble someone who's going through a difficult time. I've heard this conversation, like my 80-year-old grandma, if I tell her, it'll freak her out, and she's not long for this world, and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I get that.
You've actually talked about that in reverse, like if something were to go south with your parents, what would you do? Would you put their mind at ease? And the question is, no, you be you. You be who you are and be truthful to yourself, because that's what they're doing.
Yeah, why am I the only person?
Why do you have to be the one to?
Yeah. Am I the one person not allowed to be his authentic self?
Mm-hmm. That's not fair.
It's not fair, but
no, and it shouldn't be. And it's me working through lots of traumas and things, and going through foster care. And part of my other fear is I'm also very active in my community. I do a lot of litter cleanups, and I help people organize cleanups, and I put together like Earth Day festivals, and ran a committee for the local town council for a while, and not for the council, but a beautification committee dealing with litter and stuff for the town council. And I'm also afraid in my area where there's a church, churches are like Starbucks around here, that it will hinder me from doing the work that I'm doing as well.
Yeah, well, that's a fair concern. We are playing, and I like to say we're playing chess, not checkers. A lot of people are like, screw it. Just bust out of the closet and tell everybody, and if not, you're a coward. That's not true. It took me years to extricate myself to a point when I didn't feel like I might be punished financially in my terms of my career, when I needed to be ready. So the only advice I can give you is to make sure that whatever happens, you're doing it on your terms. Your life is too valuable to be lived completely on someone else's terms. And so my hope would be is that you would be working toward a place where you can be your authentic self. You aren't on this earth to keep everybody else comfortable. And if they're uncomfortable, that says more about them than it says about you. And if they cast you off, I guarantee you there's a community right here that will not. Okay?
This has been my solace, getting, like, not watching news and stuff. I'm, like, going back and watching old call-in shows and all kinds of stuff. Anyway, I'm sorry to take it down a notch, but thank you so much for all you've done and your commitment and just sticking through. And this stuff is important because I didn't discover you until, like, a year or two ago. And I went on this journey, and it was very helpful to me. Just, oh, wow, yeah, that's logical. That makes sense. Why didn't I think of it that way? Don't have to be afraid of this crap. Okay.
That's huge for me. That is huge. Thank you so much for that. And you're not alone. It's going to be okay. All right?
Absolutely. Can I leave you with a moment of levity before I go off the line?
Sure.
I also commented this on an article on the Thinking Ages Facebook page a while ago. But I've realized that it makes sense that the conservatives and the religious are for Trump. His entire philosophy is very similar to God. If something goes wrong, it's not his fault. If something goes right, all praise should be due him. You know, he very much operates like God.
There are a lot of parallels, I would say, is, you know, the Old Testament God, perhaps. I don't know, yeah. Hey, thanks for that. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, it just makes sense. Thanks. Thanks, Natalie.
Bye. Hang in there.
I didn't mean to walk on you. Sorry about that. There's a little bit of a delay between me and the caller, so when I hear the pause, I jump in there, and sometimes I'm talking over them. So I'm really not that rude.
You're not rude.
Okay, good. Let's do maybe one or two more, and then we'll call it love.
Okay.
Let's do 506. Hi, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Thanks for waiting on me. Who's this?
Jamie Phillips from Oakland, New Brunswick, Canada.
Thanks for calling, Jamie. You're on with Natalie and me. What do you think?
You already said one major, major orange-topped hot button there right at the end of the last call. Trump.
Yeah?
That's a hot button for me.
Yeah? That's a hot button for you, huh?
Oh, yeah.
You got a comment or question for the show?
What's your take on church trying to get themselves into schools?
Well, it's a breach of the Constitution and a violation of what our founding fathers designed. In fact, I wrote about this in my upcoming book. I want to say it was James Madison, who even back around the first decade of 1800, was opposing an effort by the theocrats to put religious preaching in public schools because religion should be a private and personal exercise. Okay? And the idea that people who came here escaping church-state overreach and the bleeding together of the government and a religion, which is what our founding fathers did, right? They were coming here escaping the Church of England and theocratic overreach. The idea that they would put together a nation that was supposed to represent one religion. Meanwhile, there's not one reference to God in the Constitution, and the only reference to religion separates church and state. And there's supposed to be no religious test to hold a public office in this country. So what I see is,
seems to be enough of it.
I see one religion that is claiming ownership of this country over people of other faiths and none, with the desire for power and control, and two, to relegate the rest of us to second-class citizenship. They don't want to share the table. I heard Catherine Stewart say they want to smash the table and put something else in place, which is not democratic, right? Having a theocracy, a Christian nationalist country, is actually anti-democracy. It's certainly anti-constitution. And getting the schools and trying to turn them into churches, specifically Bible-based stuff. The theocrats are legislating in places like Florida, and you've got the Ten Commandments on Capitol grounds in Arkansas and other places in Austin, Texas. This is the attempt by one religious group to stamp ownership on a nation that belongs to all of us. And they will not go away. We have to stop. We have to oppose them. And so we can't. And that's another reason I think we have to vote in November, because there's one party more than another that is enabling that type of theocratic overreach and Christian nationalism. And we have to do whatever we can to try to protect the courts, protect the laws, protect the Constitution. Okay?
Yeah, because it's so heavy over there, it even affects it a little bit over here.
Over where?
You know what I mean? I'm in Canada.
Oh, I, for some reason I missed that part. Oh.
Yeah, Canada, New Brunswick, Canada.
I saw somebody with a T-shirt once, and it said, Canada, America's hat. And then there was a response T-shirt that said, America, Canada's ass. So apparently we're even, I guess. So. Well, you be safe up there, my friend. Glad to meet someone from up north. You take care.
I was going to ask you another question.
Okay, quickly.
What's your take on Aaron Raw?
The man eats babies. There is no doubt.
Yeah, right.
Like, he puts the special sauce on them, and he just eats babies. Aaron's a brother.
I
toured the world with him. We did the Unholy Trinity tour in the States, and we did it the tour down under in three cities in Australia. I've known him. I first met him back at Free OK in 2011, and he's my brother.
He seems to be a pretty awesome person. And guess what? As I speak, I have an Aaron Raw shirt on.
Well, the legacy lives on.
I'm actually wearing it.
Loud and proud. Go wear the shirt. Thanks for calling the show, my friend.
And I've got an Atheist Ed shirt coming. Now I need one from you coming somehow.
All right. Go to evolvefish.com. They got shirts there. I got to run, brother. You take care of yourself, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Party on.
See you later. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being part of my 500, love.
Thanks for having me.
It's something very special to have the support of your life partner when you're doing what you are passionate to do. I can't imagine trying to accomplish this without Natalie, who has been, you've been pretty patient. Even sometimes when all of this is a bit much, because you're not an activist, you know, you're not like, oh, I can't wait to go to the next convention. While I might be,
yeah.
I'm on a plane and whatnot, but she comes out, she works my tables, right? She's out helping me with my stuff. What do you need?
I sell books.
She sells my books.
I sell books.
And she takes me and she takes this community personally. There's just no way to describe how important that is and how much it means to me. And I think we're proof that people who do come from very different places and even have very different personalities can, you know, we can jive, we can click, we can make it work. So, everybody, Natalie, happy 500th and thanks.
Happy 500th.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.